This is Leo with KTWH, Two Harbors Community Radio. We're recording this on a Tuesday afternoon, a chilly Tuesday afternoon, the day before a big deal on my personal calendar where I'm taking note of our natural world, and that is the winter solstice coming up on Wednesday, the 21st. I have in the studio with me Michaela Rice from Gooseberry Falls State Park. Greetings, Michaela. Is it warm enough for you?
In here, it's great. Yeah. Every time I go outside, I kind of cringe, and my nose feels like it's going to start bleeding any day now because it's so dry.
They have an app for that, I think. I mean, no, you can put various kinds of emollients or waxes or things that protect your skin.
Yeah.
Personally, I try, if I'm really desperate, a balaclava to cover up facial parts.
Yeah. Do you know what a bunny clava is?
No. Is that a balaclava worn by a small rabbit?
No, but it is of a bunny. Like, it's, you have a bunny balaclava called a bunny clava.
I think most people would say I look odd enough without adding the bunny element, but thank you for that vision, Michaela. Do you have a bunny clava?
No, but I want one.
You want one. Well, if anyone is...
a knitter. Please make me one.
If anyone encounters Michaela regularly, she is fishing for Christmas-type presents. it is the season. Okay, Michaela. So in some correspondence we did by email, I mentioned to you that it struck me that we have this interesting phenomenon that really showed up big time in the last 10 days, which is both deep snow and deep cold are kind of companions in the Minnesota landscape, and maybe they need to go together, because after I sent that inquiry to you about how animals, I was thinking mostly animals, there's a whole other element of how plants deal with these things, but it struck me that it's really helpful to have a lot of snow if you're going to have deep freezes, because once the earth has switched over to winter, snow is about the only insulating material out there to be worked with if you haven't already gathered your fluff into your den. Pretty much just have snow left to work
with. Yeah, it makes these different zones, and they have fun names. There's under the snowpack, in the snowpack, and then above the snowpack.
Yeah.
So these critters will do their thing in a combo, or they'll live in just one place. So, and I was reading, you know, we'll kind of combine this, because going into those different parts of the snow can help mostly with behavioral changes, right? If they want to go burrow or something, that'd be under the snow. Where they forage, where they feed can be at either level as well.
Okay.
But when you were mentioning the deep snow and the cold temperatures, those are things that are covered under the screw factor, which I had mentioned to you. This is kind of a textbook acronym of factors in the winter. So S being snow, C being cold, R radiation in terms of, you know, sun's energy, E for energy internally for the critter, and then W for wind. So those are all things that the animals kind of have to face, and those can be different levels and different combinations. But that's what we look at for how screwed animals are during the winter. There's animals that live in Minnesota that do poorly in the winter, like possums, animals that they tolerate the winter, like elk or deer, and then animals that do really well in the winter, like moose or Canada lynx, are rated very highly in their snow loving and snow.
So animals that do poorly, are they on their evolutionary way out, or are they waiting for us to warm the climate up for them?
Well, they're kind of, at their range. So like the possums, they're not necessarily on their way out, but they just are kind of limited. If the world gets colder up here, there may be animals that can't survive, so they will go locally extinct. And we've seen, obviously, you know, that's a pattern that's been happening for millions of years. But
conversely, though, if I hear you right, mm-hmm. then if the world warmed up, the Minnesota winter world warmed up,
mm-hmm.
theoretically, it could leave room for more ranges of animals to reach our area.
Yep, and it also may push some of those snow-loving animals farther north, like our moose. So there are, animals that are particularly suited for this deep snow that we have. And so scientists have learned that there are certain things that make critters do better in the snow, and better in the cold. And it's a combination of their morphology, their body, how they're put together.
Do you mean in that almost like their shape, that it'd be a more energy efficient?
That's one shape? Thing, absolutely.
Like having really long arms with skinny fingers might be a tough thing to handle.
So they're limited, by the shapes of their body. So we don't have critters here with really long ears because that, like my chihuahua, he loses all the heat out of his ears.
And eventually they'd have ears falling off, at least the external part of the ear.
Like possums, right? They get frostbite in the winter. So they're kind of limited by that. Size is also another thing. Big critters can produce a lot of internal heat. Polar bears, big animals, do really well in our northern climes. But so there's different things. Specifically, though, chest height and foot load, how big your feet are for how much you weigh, plays a really big role in how well you do in the winter.
And is that a matter of kind of flotation?
It's
when
you're
sinking in the snow?
Yeah. So critters that have big feet compared to how much they weigh are rated higher. So caribou, moose, they do a little bit better. Polar bears would probably be really, rated highly.
Yeah.
But then they have this behavioral component. So if they do things like making trails, following each other, feeding first their food under the snow, digging for food, or if they find a special way to walk, or like deer, they can bound, moose can lift their legs all the way out. They have really stretchy, actually, tendons, long, flexible legs, and that actually really helps them in the winter. So there are these also behavioral things that animals can do.
It struck me that, I don't know, the deer and moose, are they unglets?
Mm-hmm,
is that?
Mm-hmm.
But the moose have a wider footprint. I don't know if it floats any better, but I don't think of deer as being able to really float when their smaller hoof comes down. It seems like it punches pretty deep in that snow, but you're saying they compensate.
They compensate, so they might have other behavioral things. Their small feet actually is what causes them to be rated lower in this winter adaptability thing.
Well,
but it's things
like
their—
Why are they so darn successful then?
Winter coats, their ability to put on lots of fat. Their behavioral changes, like how we consider yarding, if you've ever heard of deer that yard up. So they'll huddle together or they'll stay put. They take advantage of houses and cover. Those are all things that rack up their points so that they can do better.
They almost recognize the plant habitat that provides shelter, and they kind of gravitate there during these really bad freezes like this week, maybe.
Okay. Yeah. So they kind of have to use, different tools in their toolbox, and every animal does it a little bit differently. So I thought that was pretty fun. And one thing I've been talking a lot about at the park, my coworker who was out grooming trails, we actually didn't get to groom trails until last week. Of course, the snow's been changing, but now we have trails that are groomed. Shout out to Gooseberry. Our trail crew was like the first ones to get our trails groomed up on the shore. I know we have a lot of skiers that wanted to be out. So anyway, but my friend was out there and he saw a star-nosed mole in the snow. I just was so surprised that that critter was out looking for food. Clearly it was a warmer day.
Right.
So he could wake up. This critter takes advantage of living underground, and that's how he stays warm. And they also, I learned that these moles have a layer of fat in their tail. So they're kind of like a muskrat tail, but that's how they increase that energy they have available in the wintertime by putting on fat that they can use when they can't find enough food.
That acronym SKREW, there's a lot going on there. There's a lot to consider. So for one thing, when we talk about energy, the energetics of whether an animal has the sufficient energy reserves to both keep itself warm and find more food, it strikes me there's also possible strategies where the less an animal does, and maybe this gets us towards which animals don't do anything in the winter. The ones that are truly fully sleeping out the winter, hibernating, versus those that are lethargic and don't expend too much energy. It just seems that those that are really out and about, they have to take in more food reserves than maybe they do in the summer. And so how do they, how does that work? Because a number of the animals that you referred to might include predators.
Mm-hmm.
They have to have sufficient large animal prey, or is there a lot more going on? Do we find that a lot of the larger predators are still actually eating a lot of really small animals because they're easier to find?
Yeah, it's always this cost benefit, right? In the snow, and wolves are a great example of how they fight this, that it's the snowpack, as it gets deeper, they have to expend more energy chasing a big prey. So they might then result to eating smaller animals that they don't have to expend a lot of energy. Although they will have to eat more, it still might benefit them to just stick to those smaller animals that are a little bit easier to catch. Maybe they only have to dive through the snow instead of running a half mile through the snow.
I seem to have some vague recollection that when they looked at what, for instance, Arctic wolves were surviving on, that they were kind of surprised to find just how many small animals
were part of their diet. Yeah, absolutely. So, yeah, it's always about these trade-offs. Like, if you can't pack it on, you're going to have to eat those calories every day. If you can't eat those calories every day, you know, you got to find another strategy. There's just multiple things, they can consider. It's just...
And it's all going out there across what looks like a quiet white landscape, but there's life and death decisions that are made by animals every day.
Yep, there are obviously these kind of subconscious choices, but absolutely. I mean, a chickadee could make the bad choice and not turn the right way in the wind, and he's going to burn all of his energy by shivering all day, and he's not going to make it till tomorrow because he wasn't positioned the best way in that snow. Birds use posture a lot to conserve energy. So they might not be able to burrow under or dig themselves a hole in a tree, but the way that they sit into the wind or expose their feet and their tummy is a matter of life and death for them. They have to posture themselves to conserve that energy.
Which is pretty amazing to contemplate when we've got a week where we have temperatures dropping below zero and we have winds picking up and maybe being turbulent.
Mm-hmm.
You're saying that chickadee has to make a decision every evening how it orients itself, if it's going to be back at my feeder tomorrow or if it's going to fall out of that tree perch.
Or it's going to have to be changing every hour with the wind to just keep warm and just make it till tomorrow when it can hopefully find food and warm up its little body.
I'll think about that when I see the chickadees, hopefully, knock on wood, return tomorrow morning to our feeders. Wow.
I'm sure but you got to give them a little pat on the back for making it through.
Absolutely. Because I'm imagining that you can become so weakened and so hypothermic that you can't bring yourself back. You can't ingest calories and get enough out of them fast enough. And that's what a way to go.
Yep. It's a hard cycle to be fighting. And it's like shivering produces energy. It's great, but you can't do that forever because it burns so much energy. So...
Right.
Yeah, it's all about kind of maintaining that energy budget for those critters on a daily basis. Some of them, their budgets last longer, like deer, a few weeks they can go without eating, but those chickadee budgets, man, they're very short-lived.
That kind of speaks to the idea that even dramatic cold, as long as it's not sustained over weeks, if the cycles of cold have breaks in them where we'd call it Minnesota temperate, like temperatures in the 20s, that there can be a lot of recovery and resilience to make it through the next bout of really intense cold.
Yep, because you get time to fill your bank account with some nuts and, seeds, and then you can make it through the next short period. But
I bet you some people at home are thinking that sounds like their household budget woes, make it through the lean period. Oh, boy.
Yep, that's what critters are constantly facing. So.
Wow. Well, that's interesting talk during what is on the calendar, the first day of winter tomorrow. There's a lot more winter left to come. So, Michaela, we'll have more winter topics on the horizon. But thanks for that kind of overview of what the critters are facing. What's going on at Gooseberry that we should bear in mind this holiday season?
Well, to fight the winter woes, we have a fun event on the 30th of December. Jackie Fallon's coming back with her birds, so she'll be doing a falcon program for us. And then in January, I'll be putting some winter snowshoe or hikes on the calendar. I do get a few emails, so continue to be emailing me, asking questions, program updates. Those are all on the Parks and Trails website. And then still promoting our candlelight event that will be happening the third weekend in February, and we need volunteers for that. So if you could please email me or someone at the park.
Yeah, let's tout your email again for folks.
I'm going to spell it out. michaela.rice, R-A-C-E, @state.mn.us.
Brilliant.
There we go. Send me an email. And you can put your 2 cents in about what our chit-chatting should be called, too.
Yes, we're wandering.
Blank. Yeah, if we want the alliteration in there.
I think you and I both agree. We want the wandering or wanderings in there, and we just want to know natural, nature, wildlife, wilderness. keep thinking, folks.
If you wacky, something, whatever.
Alliteration would be fun, and and wacky would kind of be honest. Truth in advertising. Anyway, it's a pleasure visiting with you. Any last thought on what people might want to look for on the coldest of days? Are there phenomena out there, like a critter who might just appear when nobody else is out there?
Yeah, look down, because that's where I'm seeing this activity. Yeah. You know, critter might pop out of one of its little tunnels, shrews, voles. Yeah. People have been seeing mice cross the street in Duluth. I saw that from my car. I saw some critter, you know, run across the road.
And then disappear in a snowbank.
Yeah.
And then that's where they want to spend most of the rest of their day.
Yes, the subnivian zone of the snowpack.
Bingo. That was a word I wanted to sneak into this conversation, but it's a weird one to just drop into an average conversation at home. Subnivian. Well, thank you, Michaela Rice, for being with us on this edition of Blank Wanderings.
Yes, yes. So happy holidays to everyone listening, and stay warm.
Absolutely. And thank you again, Michaela, and pardon the pun, but I'll see you next year.
Sounds great.
Bye now.
Bye.
Michaela Rice, the naturalist at Gooseberry Falls State Park. This is Leo for KTWH.